Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to another episode of How to Be Sound, where someone who is trying to be sound interviews other people who are trying to be sound about how to be sound-er. I'm your host, Rosemary McCabe, and I'm joined in studio today by Jean, whose name I used to think was Jeannie. Is it just Jean?
My name's actually Jean-Anne.
Oh, hyphenated.
No. So it can't be hyphenated. I don't really have ownership over my name anymore, which is really sad because of social media. So I'm like, Jean spelt the French way on my LinkedIn and professionally. I'm Jean-Anne on my birth cert. I'm Jeannie on Facebook. And it all came about because when I started writing the first time, people were using my Twitter name as my byline without asking me. And it just became such a chore to correct that I just went, oh, yeah, okay.
Oh.
I'm now Jeanne Sutton. So.
Yeah, because I always just thought you were really posh.
No, I'm from Tipperary.
Well, I mean, you can be posh and from Tipperary.
If you're a Protestant, yeah.
And so. You're not. Do you want to clear that up?
Oh, yeah.
Make that explicitly clear.
Yeah, ticked Catholic in that census.
Jean-Anne Sutton, Tipperary girl and Catholic.
Yeah.
So the reason I want to talk to anybody on my podcast is because these are women that I think are smart and interesting. So well done. Well done.
Wow.
Good for you. But more specifically, I thought that it would be interesting to talk about. We've both had a kind of a similar evolution, for want of a less disgusting word, in the past year or so, in that we've both changed careers, basically.
Yeah.
And it's something that, I mean, obviously I'm really self-obsessed and I go to therapy. So I do think about myself a lot and I'm like, oh,
that's healthy.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, I've been thinking a lot about career changes and what that means and how it feels to change career. At what age are you? Are you my age?
I'm 28.
Oh, no. Everybody I think is my age is younger than me. I'm learning lately.
I'm 29 this year, so I'm 29 in a couple of months.
So you're practically 30.
Yeah.
You're entering your 30th year.
I'm okay with that, though.
My mother would have you down as being 40. She'd be like, you're nearly 40 now. She says that to me now. I'm like, Mom, I'm 33. She's like, you'll be 40 before you know it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty young.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not worried about turning 30. I'm a bit annoyed, like, if this was 20 years ago, I'd probably have a house or something.
Mm.
But, like, I would also probably be married with
two kids.
And I wouldn't have retinol. So.
Yeah. You'd have shit skin and we'd all have way worse
hair. And we'd
have
no channels.
No.
I'd be stuck watching The Late Late Show. So I'm not really that bitter about being born when I've been born.
We wouldn't have the morning after pill, which is probably why we'd have two kids. What else would we not have? 20 years ago? I mean, because it doesn't seem like...
Have a diaphragm.
20 years ago is 1998.
Well, they definitely had the pill then, didn't they?
They had the pill. They had condoms, I think, but only just. Weren't condoms in the 90s?
I think like they were...
We know things.
My little sister put up an Instagram commemorating this legalized sale of condoms or contraception. So I think 80s, but you got it on prescription.
My God, imagine getting a prescription for your condom. Do you have to get measured?
I don't know.
Could
our dads.
Oh, no. My parents have never seen a condom. And in fact, my uncle, who I actually won't name him just in case. I'm sure he would not mind me telling this story. But he was telling me that when he was younger, he was living in, I think, Sierra Leone, and he had a friend. I think she was either Irish or English. But the way he tells the story, right, she sounds like she was a very Protestant friend. Like she was very learned and wise, and she knew things that they didn't know. Like not that she was kind of what they would call a fast woman, but she was kind of like, you know, she went on dates and she had different boyfriends. Yeah, she was liberated.
The Protestants are getting a great shout out in this podcast so far.
Yeah, oh, I always wanted to be a Protestant so you could go to Sunday school. Although I don't know why, because I didn't even like mass. Anyway, so he was friends with this woman and he was over in her apartment. They were going out for dinner or something and he'd gone over to pick her up and she was getting ready. And he said something to her. She said like, oh, will you pass me in my lipstick or something? And he said, oh, where is it? And she said, it's on the bedside table beside the condoms. And he had never seen a condom. He was married, and I think
Sierra Leone's first time he sees a condom.
Yeah, he was married, and I think they had one or two children at this point, and he had never seen a condom. And he said he was looking in the bedside cabinet, going, "Beside the condom, where's the lipstick? What?" And he suddenly spied what he thought were condoms, and he said, agog, like literally staring. I just don't know how these would work. This is insane. Like what? And she eventually came out of the bathroom. She went, "For God's sake, and, you know, where's the lipstick?" And he went, "These are condoms." And she looked at him, and she goes, "No, you fucking idiot. They're hair rollers." And he was just staring at the only thing that see that was in any way cylindrical.
Probably so scared.
I know. I'd say it shriveled right up inside him.
But you know, condoms have been around since the Victorian era. They were vulcanized rubber. Like they were really thick. You to roll them on.
Roll them on now, Jean.
Do you? As I said before, I'm Catholic, Rosemary. No, they were like, a really thick rubber. You can see them, pictures of them online. So they like made your penis feel a lot bigger.
Oh.
So they were like, it's ribbed like armor for her pleasure on like a huge scale. Maybe not for her pleasure. They were kind of like, I'm trying to think of the thickness of them. If you look them up online, they're fairly
like, they're like latex gloves, like
thicker than that. Yeah.
I thought they used to make them out of like sheep's or lamb's stomach lining or something.
They did that like before the Victorian era.
Even in kind of, you know, when they find things in the tombs in Egypt and they're like, these must have been condoms. Like, you're just like, how do you know? That could have been like a finger glove.
Can't you still get lamb skin ones? Or
I really, really hope not.
No, I'm pretty sure you
can. How did we start talking about this?
I don't know. My career.
your career. Tell us. Tell our loyal listeners about what you were doing and what you are now doing and why you changed.
Will I start from like when I'm 18?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, and I'm
Have a time limit.
I'm leaving the convent like Maria in the Sound of
did
Music.
Did you go to a convent?
I did, yeah.
Was it a boarding school?
There was a boarding school, but I went to the day girl because I lived in the same area. But I really liked my secondary school. It was an Ursuline order of nuns, but the nuns didn't teach there. But you did have religion classes, which were really funny. And
like funny, haha.
Yeah, I found them funny, haha, because, like, at home I had a pretty okay, my parents weren't really strict or anything, so you'd come in and you'd be taken away with, like, a pinch of salt.
Okay, yeah, so your parents at home weren't going, you must believe everything the nuns tell you, Jean.
No, there wasn't any of that.
Do your parents call you Jean Anne or Jean?
Jean.
Okay.
They don't use my name that often when they're talking to me, like, it's on the phone. So.
Yeah, true, okay, yeah.
But
my mom actually mostly calls me Beatrice. Which is my sister's name.
That's so a she uses lovely
that name
names.
A lot more than mine.
My mum calls me like my sister's name before she gets to mine whenever she's trying to pinpoint. But yeah, so I left school at 1918 and I went to Trinity and I did law and I picked it out in my CAO for the reason that like I remember like my mum will say she didn't say this, but she was like not into me doing English and philosophy as a arts degree. And I did very well in my subjects in school. Like I was getting A's from 12 on. So it was kind of destined that I would do a high points course. I didn't really have a choice, but I wanted to do it as well.
How many points was law?
It's like 500 and something. Like yeah, I don't want to be that person who remembers. I do remember. But
well, then you are that person.
Yeah. But I remember those things anyway. So it would have been 500s but I knew going into my Leaving Cert that I didn't find my Leaving Cert difficult. I didn't get that stressed out about it. I was really good at study. So
yeah.
I think when you're a particular person and when you know the bare minimum you have to do, you're going to be fine. So I study by exam papers. That was how I did it. And that's how I did it in college as well. So I did law in Trinity and I originally had Cork down UCC to do law because a lot of girls in my secondary school in Tipperary would be going to Cork and I thought it would have been easier to know people. But then my whole life changed because my sister had tickets to Shane Ward in Cork at Live in the Marquee summer. And it was before the CAO deadline. So I went down to Cork with her because she had a ticket and we stayed in a hotel down there.
And what did you decide? It was a shithole or something?
Like I just... Shane Ward was funny. We had a great time with it. I was hanging around Cork the next day and it was just... I didn't feel it. And
it's funny how you can have those moments like, you know, when you go somewhere and it's raining and it's grey and you don't have a particularly great time and you're like, this place is a bit shit.
Yeah. So I went home and changed my CAO.
I went to Leon once and kind of had that experience. Like, and Leon, I'm sure, is lovely, but I just found it really, it's like, this is just such a boring place to be.
So yeah, I went home and changed my sail and ended up getting into Trinity and did law there for 4 years. And I went to Canada for my year three. Yeah, went to Canada then for 2 semesters. And then when I came back to Trinity for my fourth year, Canada sort of changed me a bit because I was on my own a lot.
And they're real liberal.
Yeah, they are really liberal over there. Like, they start giving out to me about our abortion law. And I was just there like, hi, I'm 21. You know, like, yeah. I'm not an elected representative. I'm sorry. But they were like, people over there were quite nice. But I took a class in gender studies over there. It was law and feminism and a few other things thrown in. It was the woke class.
That sounds really nice.
And the lecture.
Law and feminism and a few other things that we could all do with a bit of that.
Yeah. And like, learned loads of things. Like, there was kind of a quota in the class nearly of people from all different backgrounds. And there was loads of guys in the class. So we learned different things. And every class we did a different theory, and it wasn't a forced thing, and your essay could be pretty flexible. Like, there was guys in the class, like, you were talking about privilege and all that without using the word privilege.
Well, the word privilege wasn't really around then.
Yeah, people were just talking about really interesting things, like how one girl did her essay on fashion labels robbing native designs from, like, women in Asia and Africa, and just how these women don't know that something that a girl saw on her holidays in Madagascar is now in Milan. Yeah. And just like how those girls can get redress. And that was her essay. And she did it because she was really into crafts. And I done my essay on abortion. And so everyone got to share, and it was lovely. And at the end of the lecture, Sonia Lawrence was her name, the lecturer. And she was so nice. And I've since met up with her, and she came to Ireland. She like said, there's no point in taking this class if you don't do anything with it. And so I came back to Trinity and I applied for, with my friend Fiona Hyde, to do a women's magazine.
Fiona Hyde at AmGoSeek on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know if we're let name her Twitter. I'm sure we are.
You can search Fiona Hyde and you find her at AmGoSeek on Twitter.
Yeah, and she does the advice column in the journal.
Yes, yeah.
So she's out there, she's public. And we did a women's magazine called Siren, and we got funding for it, and we printed it, and we did photo shoots. It was all about, like, we said it was a gender equality magazine at the time to get the funding.
Ireland.
Yeah. So, and the equality office in Trinity were great about it. We launched it. Zippon and Gilligan launched it, and it won a Smedia at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So it was really fun and it was really positive. And I met loads of people through it. So I sort of put myself out there more. And that magazine kind of led to other opportunities. And one opportunity I didn't take up, which I probably should have at the time looking back, in that the Glass had judged the magazine's thing afterwards, the magazine's award. And afterwards, when we were in the kind of room after you get the award, one of the women in charge of Glass had told me, listen, send us an email and come in and do an internship. And she'll probably deny she said that now, but she had said to me, like, you know, if you want to come in and get work experience, like, let me know. And I was like, well, I don't have the money to do that. And I didn't do it. And I then I was working in Trinity as a receptionist. And then after that, I was unemployed. And I think I worked for a few weeks. I worked for a few weeks in a Dylan McGrath restaurant, and it was a disaster. It just was not for me.
I actually can't imagine you.
No, as like, I was the hostess.
Yeah. I mean, similarly, that I think like I'm not good at, you know, if I think somebody's being slightly rude to me, or even, you know, if somebody kind of touches me, you know, like when you're showing, I often think about hostesses when they're showing men to their tables and stuff, and men might put their hand on the small of their back, those kind of things. Like I would not be graciously smiling at them. I'd be going, excuse me, like I'd be fired basically.
One of the days, because it was guys came in, one of the guys who funded it, or an architect or someone like that, and they were coming in having a meeting there, and he asked me to make coffee, and I just went, I don't know how to make coffee, and then went back to my job. But the thing is, I don't know how to make coffee. I grew up in Tipperary.
Do you know how to make coffee now?
No.
Like, I know how to put Trinity, for crying out loud.
I know how to put Nescafe in hot water.
No.
But like, but I think not learning how to make coffee means I can't make you coffee.
Yeah, and there is actually an interesting in I talked about this in one of the previous podcasts, but in Feminist Fight Club, which is the...
Oh, I have that book. I've read bits of it. It's great.
Yeah, it's really good. And there's a lot of talk in that about how women are the ones who always get asked to make the coffee.
But I always think if you're asked to take notes in a meeting, say you have carpal tunnel.
Have you ever done that?
No, but I plan on doing it. It's like one of my backups. And I do actually have a little wrist support thing that I have to wear sometimes. So I'm
so you
like,
can just whip it out and be like, oh yeah, no, I've carpal tunnel.
Actually, I can't. Yeah. So yeah, I did that for a few weeks and it was just disastrous. And then I did an internship at the Web Summit for 6 months. And I really liked the Web Summit. I had a gas time there. I worked with some really fun people. I didn't work for the Web Summit event itself. I worked, they had satellite events in a way. Okay. So I worked for one in London and I had loads of fun at that. And you meet like the funniest people at tech conferences. They're so serious and they're just odd people. Like, I'm just going to say that, and really intense. And their companies probably don't exist anymore, you know, like, and they were like, these are going to change the world. And you I think as I was having such fun there, like, it was really stressful because you were doing calls to America. So you're up late waiting to talk to these people. But everyone's just like a bullshit merchant in that space. So you'd be on the phone kind of laughing and you'd have to be like, and tell me, Adam, about your startup. And you'd like, you don't care. And his startup sounds really dumb.
But I feel like a lot of this is kind of your attitude to life, because I think in that situation, I would be getting really pissed off. Do you remember, like, fuck's sake, I have to interview this next, you know, that's going nowhere and this is stupid and it's such a waste of my time. And like, you know, like, this person is so weird. Whereas you're like, this is gas.
Yeah, like, we'd be just, one of the guys in the place was obsessed with getting LinkedIn requests. So we try and outdo him on LinkedIn connections. And it was just a really funny time. And
LinkedIn can get very competitive because it rates you. Do you know what I mean? So it goes in and like you can see where you are. Like, are you an expert? Are you an A or a B? You know what I mean? I don't know exactly what it is. I'm not on LinkedIn anymore. But when I was pretty high.
I'm pretty good at it as well. I use it a lot though for things. I find LinkedIn a really easy, but I think from working the Web Summit, I was doing sales. So LinkedIn was a really easy way to know what to say to somebody.
God, I'm so easily influenced now. I'm like, maybe I should get back on LinkedIn.
No, like, if you don't That's need compelling. It, you don't need it. And I think actually working in sales and the Web Summit helped me for journalism and all that a lot, because you had 5 minutes to get ready for a call. Mm. And you know, some people, they do research packages and all that. And they get really annoyed when they hear someone on RTÉ radio going, oh, so tell us a bit about yourself. And I'm like, that person has the same approach to life as me. And that, like, no, I'm going to read my Kindle on the way to work rather than doing work.
Yeah.
So it prepared me for doing stuff really quickly and having to learn about complex businesses that no longer exist. Huh. And also everyone in there was a really funny person. And I left that after 6 months because if I was staying, I was going to be staying in sales. Okay. And I said that to like the HR manager and Patty when I was leaving. I was like, oh, there's not really a role for me. And they did ask me to stay on, but I knew I would end up back in sales no matter what role was kind of created for me, because it's a company that sells tickets.
Yeah.
So then I was on the dole for a while after that. And
so you really should have taken the internship with the Gloss. Although, like, that is kind of does raise the point that internships are such bullshit, because you need to have the means to support yourself while you're doing them. Do you know what I mean? So they are the reserve of people who have money.
Yeah, well, I didn't get offered the internship at the Gloss. I was invited to kind of apply.
Sorry. So like, yeah, but I mean, after the Web Summit, then you had time that you could have gone in and gone.
Yeah. And this actually led to me, after the Web Summit, I had a few months. So it was actually really tough at the time because I was on the dole, and the dole in Ireland is no money whatsoever. I agree completely with Raisin, and some people would really recoil at that suggestion, but it's no money. It's not a standard of living for, like, people talk about, like, that Leo Varadkar campaign really annoyed me. And you can't live in Dublin at the moment on the dole.
No.
Terrible money. It's not money. It's money for to do one grocery shop. Like, it's really bad, and you can't live in it. And I was having like one meal a day on that. And like, I always say, like, me and my boyfriend grew a lot closer because I would stay at his house to eat. That's what it was like. And it's just a bad way to spend your pivotal year in your 20s is like undernourished and having bad food. So I was doing all that, and I went down to Electric Picnic. My boyfriend was DJing at it, and I was like, oh, I'll come with you. And he was like, yeah. And then in the car on the way down, him and his friend were like, Jim, we don't know if you have a ticket. And I was in such a kind of mood that I was like, I actually don't care, because I'll get a lift back with Davey's dad. And I'd only packed a play suit and various pairs of tights. and knickers, and I had a like Nature Valley in my bag. That was like my attitude at the time. I loved how like I didn't really give a shit, and I was just there with my sunglasses on, stand like my penny sunglasses, like I don't care.
This just seems so stressful. This is a very stressful story. What happened then?
And then we went down there and...
Did you get your ticket? Did you have to go home with Davy's dad?
Like, no, I got in and we were staying in the artist camp area. And yeah, it was really funny because Dan and them were acting in some like play in the kids area. And I wasn't clear to go into kids area. So I'd have to wander around on my own. Like Dan was playing Hamlet in some kids' play. It's just really funny. But Roisin Agnew was in the play as well and hanging out. So I got to know her at it and I was hanging out with that crowd. And then a week or two later, Roisin messaged me, oh, I need an intern in Image. And I was like, I'm not doing anything else. And Jobbridge was starting up. So I went in and I met them and I was like, yeah, I'll start in a few days. And I did. But before I went in to meet them, my mum at the time was saying, would you look at doing a master's? And the government had taken away the grants for masters, so it would have meant my parents paying for it. And I was like, okay, I'll think about it. And I looked at someone DCU and she'd said, listen, you really like communications, you loved doing that magazine and you got loads of coverage from it or whatever, like would you think of doing that? And I was like, oh, I would. So I met a woman who was an established journalist for coffee, and she said to me, all you're going to get out of that master's at the moment is your work experience.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know how to do this stuff. Like, you know, you have a really sound degree in law. Like, you've done other things. Just go in and do the Jobbridge.
Mm.
And I did that. So I got Jobbridge in Image and I was on like no money. Like, Jobbridge is really bad and like paying for your commute and all that really ate into it. But I really liked working in Image. Like, looking back, they were great. I had really nice bosses. I worked with great teams. Roisin then left to set up a confessional magazine and she's now doing film and stuff. And Caroline Foran came in to be deputy editor. And so I was working with Caroline Foran and Ellie Balfe and they were just lovely to work with.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the early days of websites in Ireland. Not early days, but the thing about like women's websites around the world is I don't know how, it's really hard to do them right. And it's really hard to know your audience because with the internet, the audience changes so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, one week mental health is in, then the next week people want to know about abs. So it's really hard to get that. So I think we were kind of in that phase of, you know, still trying to find out what the reader was. And like you have analytics, but if you follow analytics too much, you end up making bad stuff.
Yeah. And I think that was around the time as well that the advertising money was moving. So it was like, well, we haven't figured out how to make money from online yet, but people aren't really spending with print anymore. So we need to figure it out really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And it was that kind of urgency, I think.
Yeah. And I was lucky in that like the three of us had a pretty similar outlook and sense of humour. And they were just, Ellie and Caroline were lovely to work with. And then I was there about 2.5 years, maybe longer. I was there about 3 years.
But you weren't on Jobbridge or like as an intern the whole time, were you?
I was on Jobbridge for 9 months and then I became junior editor and then I became senior editor and then I was senior features editor for like a month. But I'd done things like events with Image. Being on Jobbridge for 9 months was very tough and it's affected me financially to this day. So, but I don't really get angry about it. Like I am... I'm emailing my TDs at the moment about my tax credits because I am low on them. I don't have enough tax credits to claim a free dental appointment every year because of Jobbridge.
Okay.
And that's happened to a lot of people around the country. And I think that's bullshit that I went in and worked every day.
Yeah.
And the government set up this scheme and didn't reward me for going along with their scheme. Like I didn't emigrate. I stayed in Ireland.
Which is what they said they want. You know what I mean? What they wanted.
And I think that's like a crime that they treat people like that, and the fact that companies use Jobbridge to not hire people, it costs the companies nothing.
Yeah,
and they got away with that, and it's kind of the reason. Like, I don't think I'll ever be able. Like, I voted my Labour candidate in the last election on. I voted on a pro-choice platform, but I don't think I'll do that ever again. Like after this referendum, I don't think if it passes. I don't think I'd vote for Labour again after this referendum because the Jobbridge thing, which I know various government parties or politic groups were party to, I just really hate it. And it was good that I got to do it and it's affected, like it got me into media.
Mm.
And but what it just did to people, I just don't like that. And it really devalued work.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some pluses, but you could see, like, when you looked up the Jobbridge site, I remember at the time going in one day and just looking through all the jobs, and the amount of jobs that were on Jobbridge that were jobs, that were full-time roles that they needed to hire full-time people for, do you know what I mean? They were really, I felt loads of companies were just taking advantage and taking someone in who they weren't giving... They weren't going, we want someone to come in and really learn from us and we're going to mentor them or we're going to do X and we're going to do Y. They were going, we need labour and we need it really cheap and we need it now.
Yeah, and I think that...
And it was a really easy thing to take advantage of.
Yeah, and I think that happened, like, across the country.
Yeah, yeah. No, it happened everywhere. And it happened from, like, news agents to... I mean, I think I saw at one point somebody... They were looking for people with a PhD on Jobbridge. Mm. And you're like, how the fuck do you think people are going to have gone through, like, their Leaving Cert... their undergrad, a postgrad and a PhD and have paid for all that and now you're going to not pay them.
Yeah, it was, I don't know if the word is criminal, but it was really dismissive of people.
Yeah.
So it was great in that, like, I got into media that way and then I went for the job in Stellar, which you also had. So
oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
I was your successor.
You became the new me.
Yeah. Without the Snapchat.
Oh, yeah. Back in the heady days of Snapchat fame.
So I was there for about a year and 8 months. I did the calculations today and I've now moved on from that and from that kind of media role. I'm now working in content design in the public sector because I was done with media, but I just needed a change. Yeah. And I went back to college. I'm in college part time doing science communication in DCU. So I'm trying to pivot, I think is the, from my web summit days, the word, I'm pivoting. But
it's very on trend, I heard.
Pivoting.
Yeah.
Science communication is as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Growing field. And it's really interesting. But what got me interested in science communication was I was writing so much kind of women's health stories, but also observing bad advice on social media and I was like, oh, this is weird. And it was kind of before the big fake news phenomenon. But I was thinking about it for a while. I was like, oh, I need to, this is bothering me.
Yeah.
And I want to sort of.
Well, you want to be better.
Yeah.
No, I mean, in your, like, you want your science communicating to be better.
Yeah. And just this sort of, you can get a press release and you can write up the press release without questioning anything. I think that happens a bit. Doesn't happen a lot. Like, I think people really go after journalists as being lazy. And I don't think that's the case. I actually think readers are lazy. Mm. So, like, if you're into those content churning sites and you're clicking the links, that's the decision you made.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
like a newspaper you can pick up and it'd be in a cafe. But like when you go online and you click a link on Facebook, you decided to click that link and you decided to give them traffic.
It is kind of that moment of when you see people going, do you really call this news? And you're like, you're reading it.
Yeah.
Like you clicked on that knowing it was a story about Kim Kardashian's arse and now you're giving out that it's not news.
Do you know what I mean?
You're like, it's so stupid.
But like you can surround yourself with the type of media. Like that's the whole bubble thing. Like you can surround yourself with whatever news, hard news, broadsheets. Mm. And I think people giving out about clickbait, I'm like, that's, you liked those pages originally.
Yeah.
You can unlike them. You can block them from your feed. You can seek out news. Like I read the RTE.ie every morning now and I read the Irish Times and I click on the Irish Independent. Like, so you can read.
Do you subscribe to the Irish Times?
I have a student offer, which I believe is free. That's the reason I went back to college, all the discounts.
That is another compelling. I'm like, get back on LinkedIn, go back to college, get your free Irish Times.
Now you're going to pay for your fees. So it's an expensive Irish Times.
True. Yeah, yeah, okay.
But yeah, so I kind of decided to change my career. I was in a shop, the Landis on Westmoreland Street. And I was on the phone to a friend. And I saw like the Sunday papers and there was someone profiled in the Sunday papers and I looked at her face and I was like, fuck, I'm going to have to interview her someday. I don't want to do it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make a change.
Who was it?
I can't say because you'll get in trouble and I'll get in trouble.
Yeah, I'm in enough trouble.
So, because she's harmless.
Well, they're all harmless. Yeah. That's the problem with Irish celebrity. I was talking to somebody about this today. Like somebody was going, oh, do you think like such and such gets trolls or gets haters? And I was like, no, because I think the majority of kind of A-list or like very successful celebrities or bloggers or Snapchatters or influencers are harmless.
Yeah.
Which I think is an insulting word, actually.
Ellen Tanham says it's the worst thing you can say about somebody.
Yeah. Or like they're nice or they wouldn't hurt a fly.
Nice, I think, is different from harmless, because harmless kind of suggests a level of idiocy.
True. Yeah, yeah.
Not like that you're banging into walls, Mr. Bean, but that, you know, no, you're just not slice, along with things.
Yeah, like you couldn't really make a difference if you tried. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You couldn't really affect change if you tried. Like, back to science communication for a second.
Okay.
You have a specific interest, or like you have a specific problem that you're interested in having represented correctly, which is something that's kind of been in the news the last few weeks. Oh, let's talk about Lena Dunham.
Yes.
And I know you really want to talk about her.
And my relevant vagina.
Yes.
So, yeah, I have endometriosis. And actually, it was the first article I wrote for Image was about endometriosis, about my endometriosis and my diagnosis. So I was writing about it before it was cool.
Okay. Yeah. So you pipped Lena to the Post.
Yeah. I don't know if I feel comfortable being compared to Lena, but or whatever her name is.
No, I used to be compared to Lena all the time. Like a couple of years ago, it was like, oh God, Rosamund McCabe thinks she's the Lena Dunham of Ireland. And kind of before she was like the anti-hero, when she was still like annoying, but kind of woke.
Whereas I don't know now if you could like call her an anti-hero now, because her reputation is pretty...
It's pretty bad. She's more anti than hero now, isn't she?
Yeah, and I... Do you know, when she writes something like an essay, they usually are good. Like, they're... Her book's grand.
Oh, I hated her book.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of her book navel gaze in any way, but yes. Like...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Well, objectively, I was like, it's fine.
Her book, I felt like, was written by somebody who thinks they're like 20% more intelligent than they are, which is probably what my book of memoirs would be like. You know what I mean?
If anyone writes a memoir in their 20s, they're basically inviting regret into their life.
What if you have enough regret already and you're just, you're willing to take that risk?
Like, I think there's like the hot mess memoir, and then there's the just that particular, oh, I feel like everything in my life is profound.
Well, she does.
Yes. So there's like the Kat Marnell memoir, which is, you're like, whoa, and you're loving it. And I think like there's grief memoirs, but someone writing about like a difficult time they went through, I'm okay with that. But this sort of like turning everything in your life into a metaphor, I'm not into that.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I just feel that Lena Dunham is, she came along at the wrong time. I think if Lena Dunham was in the 90s, she would have survived. Her reputation would have survived intact, but...
Well, because nobody would have thought she was racist when she said that thing about the MTV Awards, or... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's kind of this, like, privileged white person who is maybe not very aware of her privilege and not very woke in terms of race. And so says these things that in the 90s nobody would have batted an eye at.
Yeah, so I think
she...
would
have been like, oh, she's a profound feminist. Whereas now it's like, okay, yeah, fine, you're like, we're all fucking feminists, but you're also a bit like...
Yeah, like, I hate TV show Girls. Like, I'm just not into it.
I gave up after season two, but then I heard the last season was amazing, so I want to restart. But tell our listeners, if they don't know, if they've got this far, what is endometriosis?
Well, I actually contacted the Endometriosis Association of Ireland because there's a lot of miscommunication around what endometriosis is, and magazines are better at it now. But there was an era where they were misdefining it. So I contacted the Endometriosis Association of Ireland, who I've been in touch with since before I was diagnosed, because I'm quite proactive with that kind of stuff. Like, I emailed them. What happened was I emailed them as soon as I had the symptoms. And I was like, what are the supports in Ireland for me? And they rang me. They were great.
Oh, wow.
So endometriosis is basically you, it's a chronic condition. It's invisible and it's diagnosed by a laparoscopy surgery. There's no other way to diagnose it, which is something that people, so someone might meet me and they'll be like, I have endo. And I was like, oh, did you have the lap? And they're like, no, my GP said it. And I'm like, in my head, you might have something else wrong with you and you're treating the wrong thing. So it's always a lap is the only way to diagnose it. So it's basically cells similar to that in the uterus are found in the pelvic area on the bowel, bladder and space between the bowel and womb. And they're lesions that are similar in nature to the uterine lining, but they're not the same. So some people are like, oh, it's when your womb lining grows outside your womb, but it's not, it's something similar to it.
Okay.
And it responds to hormonal stimulation and can create inflamed and painful areas within the body. And it's been found in other pelvic extra pelvic locations, such as the lungs and skin in extreme conditions. It's not an STI and it's not cancer. And the current science is that it's most likely present from embryological development. So when you're in the womb as a baby.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
so it's nothing like, I mean, importantly and kind of obviously, but it's nothing you did. It's nothing anybody's done.
It's something your dad did.
God, yeah.
Which is like something I'm really interested in with the whole conversation around feminism and motherhood and giving birth. And, you know, people are like, oh, like we're going to have one drink. And you're like, actually, medically, that's ill-advised. And it's just, and there's stuff that came out about this study recently about taking painkillers during pregnancy. And there is a correlation between girls having a lower egg count of mothers who took painkillers. So there's a lot to be like, it's an unpopular feminist sort of outlook in that. But when you were pregnant, you should be.
Well, because it's a very double-edged sword. So
yeah.
On the one hand, we're like, okay, you know, when you are pregnant and planning on giving birth to that child, then there are certain responsibilities and maybe expectations. And I guess there are certain kind of shoulds that as a society we could expect that, like, you should refrain from drinking alcohol, you should refrain from smoking and all these things. But then there's the other side of it where it's like, well, women get enough shit for the decisions that they make, and, you know, around their bodies and around their reproductive systems.
I'm really interested in all that. I know it's like a unpopular thing to be kind of really gleefully into. Not that I'm gleefully into, but I'm just like, well, what does happen? And I'm not saying that, and I'm not a scientist, so this is probably me just speculating. But if they found out that endometriosis is caused by something during pregnancy, I would want to know the cause of endometriosis, because they don't know the cause. It's incurable. Yeah. And as someone with the condition, I want to know why I have it. And I'm not going to find that out in my lifetime.
Like, so that you can not pass it on, and so that we can all not pass it. Do you know what I mean? So that we can eradicate it.
It's not so much about eradicating and passing it on, because like, say if I got if I was pregnant, like I wouldn't think having endometriosis is a curse. I don't see it as a curse. It's just something that's happening to me.
Well, I mean, so I am not a doctor, and B, do not have endometriosis. But when I was working at Stellar, I did a piece on endometriosis, and I interviewed several women who suffered from it, and I spoke to the Endometriosis Association of Ireland about it, because they were saying the same things, that there are so many miscommunications. And I was really staggered by the fact that, for example, I didn't know that you could get really bad symptoms of endometriosis when you didn't have your period. I thought it only happened when you were menstruating. No. And I didn't know that it could get so severe. So I spoke to women who were like, I've been basically off work for a year because I can't move, because I'm in incredible pain, because it's growing like at the back of my bladder and it's kind of pushing on my spine and I'm in pain and I have these lesions. And I didn't know any of this. So, you know, not necessarily that I'd be going, let's test for endometriosis in the fetus and then consider whether to continue with the pregnancy. Like, that's extreme. But at the same time,
the science isn't there. So the science isn't there.
Well, thank God.
Yeah.
TG, as my friend Kirsty would say. But I do think that there are some endometriosis sufferers who would see it as a curse. Do you know what I mean? Because they have like incredibly severe. And I'm not saying that you don't, because I don't actually know.
Yeah, well, I got diagnosed in Ireland, but the road to my diagnosis started in Canada when I was living there. And the great thing about Canada is you have health insurance, but you pay for it. You pay a couple of hundred, I paid about $800 when I was there, and that was for 8 months on a student visa, so you would be paying more. And their health system, in my opinion, it was fantastic, but I don't think that would work really in Ireland, because you're paying a health insurance company and it's a big cultural shift here.
Yeah.
But it would, it meant that I did have to queue at my GP over there, but I wasn't queuing for ages and I got to see them. And I was in Canada, I think it was like around February maybe, and I passed out from pain from my period. And my period's been pretty bad in Canada. And a lot of people, it's triggered with puberty. Mine was triggered in my early 20s. I had heavy periods, but I wasn't off from school. There was other girls and they couldn't sit in class. They'd be up in the hallway with the hot water bottles.
I have a friend who took about 3 days off per month, I remember in secondary. And like at the time we were all a bit like, oh, that's very dramatic. And she'd be like, oh, I was getting sick and I was fainting. We'd be like, as if. And it turns out she has endo.
Yeah.
And like so really bad.
That didn't happen for me in school. I had periods and they were really heavy, like really, really heavy. But you know the way the ads are all like the blue water at the time?
Yeah.
You were like, you had nothing to compare. You were like, oh, there's another clot. Like, you know.
And I mean, when I spoke to the people from the association, they were saying that one of the big issues is that a lot of the time when women go to male doctors who have never menstruated will say things to them like, that's just normal. That's just menstruation. Do you know what I mean? That's just to be expected. Some women just have heavy periods.
This is where I have like an infuriating divergement from that, or if that's even a word, in that I had excellent male doctors.
I think the word is divergence.
Divergence.
Because I've seen like that great movie with Shailene Woodley.
So I actually, in Canada, I passed out from the pain and it took me ages to walk to the health clinic, and it was a 10 minute walk away because I kept having to sit down. And when I got to the clinic, I had to go into a room and lie down on the floor.
Oh.
And I then got seen by someone and she was like, okay, I have a feeling I know what this is. And she goes, we're going to do a few tests and give you painkiller or whatever. And then I got, with my Canadian healthcare, I got reduced drugs price. So I took a few weeks later, I went in to see, got all my tests done, I've had so many smears like that. It's definitely not good for me because I've been investigated because they have to outrule everything before they can open you up.
So they rule out polycystic ovaries and
a lot of things like that. Things, yeah. And I forget all the things I got done, but a man walked in to the surgery and he like looked through my files and looked at me and goes, you've got mechanical problems. And I love that because I love honest black and white chat. And he just went through, I'm pretty sure you have endo, we're going to do more tests here, so when you arrive back in Ireland you have everything done, all you have to do is get the surgery. And I was delighted with that. And the weird thing was though, I had, this like makes me sound all mystical, but years ago I had read about endo as a teenager. And you know when you're like a teenager and you're like, oh, I bet you I was this in another life, or I bet you I was that, you know when you're mental?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember reading about endo in a magazine and just being like, I bet you I have that. Like, you know, wanting it in a weird way, or just like, you know when you want something?
Yeah. And I kind of wanted a back brace like Deanie in that Judy Blume book for like, why? That sounded awful.
I know.
But I think it was because she was almost a model. Until she found out she had scoliosis. So it was more that I wanted to be pretty and thin enough.
And you
to
could
be
have
a
had
model.
That chance.
Yeah. And I was like, if I just get my back brace, then when I come out of it, I'll be like the swan.
Yeah. So I'd read about that. And I remember going to a friend, like we were in an Indian, like, you know, when you go at 16 out to like a Chinese or an Indian, you feel
You're so
adult.
Fancy.
And I was like, I think I have endometriosis. And I forgot about that until like recently. So but I didn't make it up because my memories are very clear. And
okay.
I was also a couple of months before that, and kind of then my ex-boyfriend had come over to see me. I remember we were driving to Niagara Falls, which is a shithole.
Yeah,
I'm just going to say
this.
That right now.
It's like a really shitty little town, isn't it? Like, that's awful. I hope I don't have any listeners. Well, I hope I do have some listeners from Niagara. That'd be so exciting.
I'd say they'd agree. We were stuck there for ages, but I bought a copy of Cosmo. I remember there was a quiz and I'd answered yes, no to a bunch of questions. Like, why? It's too private a question to say here. And I ended up landing on the endometriosis tile. So Cosmo had like diagnosed me before doctors did, which I was
that
like.
That seems irresponsible of Cosmo to have like a yes, no quiz that diagnoses
US
you.
US Cosmo's great medical writing.
It's good for science communication.
Very good for medical communication. So I subscribed to it by print. But then in Canada, I came back home and I went to a female GP in my local area. And I had all my documents from these specialists in Canada. Like they were like, this girl, all we need to do is cut her open and we're going to find it. And I was chill with that. And I went to the doctor and I was like, I need you to refer me to this doctor who the Endometriosis Association of Ireland had recommended a list of doctors that they knew were specialists. And I picked one out because I looked him up and I saw a YouTube video where he'd won Pampers Doctor of the Year. And I was
Pampers?
Like, yeah, or some like Brand, this is how I make my decisions, Rosemary. I go with my gut. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to the guy that like Nappies Brand have crowned Obgyn of the Year and whose picture is just a YouTube video with some music. And I was like, I want to see this guy. So I want to get referred to him. And the GP questioned my whole, even though I had professionals from Canada, she was like, I don't think you have this. And I was like, oh, well, it's funny because like a team of medics in Canada think I have it. And I got really aggressive with her. And I was like, just sign the fucking letter and post it off. And she was really taken aback. But I was like, I just want to get this done. Because I had read about diagnostic delays. There's delays of like 9 to 15 years with people.
I'd say doctors hate people who have read about diagnostic delays. Do you mean they're like not another one?
But the thing is, if you're sick, you're sick.
Yeah, and I think it's really important in all these situations to be empowered enough to go, no.
Yeah, and
like,
just
you
go.
You need to send me for this, like now. Yeah. Just, yeah.
And I got up and to see the doctor a couple of weeks later.
And this was for the laparoscopy, was it?
Yeah, to get the lap. And he did a transvaginal exam there, which is where they put like a dildo in you and it's got a camera. I've had loads of them done, so I'm pretty okay with that.
A dildo with a camera?
It's like, yeah, a transvaginal exam. You'll get it if you're looking for cysts and stuff, and you get it when you're pregnant, up until like a certain trimester, I believe. So they just lube up a thing and put it in you.
You gads.
So, but like I've had so many people look down there that I have no qualms about it anymore.
Yeah.
So I got that done, and then he was like, yeah, we're going to book you in for the surgery. And he got me in, way sooner than I should have got in. But it was to do with like this private public thing that has now disappeared, where a consultant could like make a decision if you want to see you sooner. Yeah. So I got seen years before a lot of people would have gotten seen.
Years?
Yeah, some people don't get seen for like years. So I got in because because I had everything else done.
Yeah.
So I was a tick the box. There's a free bed in that day.
Yeah.
And I got in, and after the surgery, it was my final year. I was doing a dissertation at the time, and I actually dropped out of the dissertation module because I just wasn't in the head frame. Like, having surgery is, you don't realize it's actually you're being cut up.
Yeah.
And your body afterwards is not right for ages because it's been invaded.
And I mean, also even from general anesthetic, that takes days.
Yeah. So
to get back to normal.
But I was having a gas time because I was doing that women's magazine with Fiona, and I was hanging out with loads of new people, and I'd met my boyfriend around then, and that like we weren't going out or anything, but like he was in my life and just all these really fun new people. And even though I'd had surgery and had to wear like high-waisted dresses for a while because they had like blown up my belly and all that to find the endo and to like excise some of it. So that's where they take it off. Mm-hmm. But it grows back. So you can't stop endo. You can treat it, but you can't stop it. So I don't know what I'm like down there anymore. Like, I probably am due another surgery, but I don't really want to investigate that. And also it's money of going, I have to go private to see somebody, and I don't have health insurance and pre-existing conditions. It's an absolute quagmire. So after that, I was put on, I remember I got a prescription for like one version of the pill, and I didn't want to take that pill because two girls I'd known had taken it had tough times on it. So I went back to the GP in the college, and they put me on some shitty like little generic, and it wasn't treating it. It wasn't right. And then I went to the GP I'm with now, and she's like, you're not meant to be on that, and you've been on the wrong medication for 6 months. So then I'm now on Ofurinet, and I'm finding it amazing. And I'm off it there for the last week, but I have to see my GP, so I couldn't get an appointment, so I'm off for an extra few days, and I immediately started breaking out.
Oh wow.
So I don't have spots most of the time, so I'm like, when people are like, I came off the pill, and I'm like, fucking thick. So I'm like, you're all complaining, you're all buying acids, and you're like, just pump yourself with chems. So because people are like, oh Jean, your skin, like, oh yeah, I know, I don't even drink that much water. No, it's because I'm kept alive by Big Pharma. So, but the only thing is, like, I have, I do get like extra hair or whatever, and I find it really hard to lose weight. But I think that's more the endo than the pill, because this pill treats me fine, but some women it doesn't work for. So yeah, every endo case is completely different. But as regards symptoms, and it makes, this sounds like, oh, I just have endo, but I have terrible fatigue. Like, I haven't been to a nightclub in years. I can't do nights out. And that has caused ruptures in friendships, like these kind of passive aggressive distances. And it's also like my relationship has been affected. And like, me and Dan don't go out a lot together. We hang out a lot, but like, he'll be out on nights out and yeah. I'll be home by 12. And it's because if I know if I went out, I'll be fucked for days. And sometimes I get fatigue in that I just can't get out of my bed. And it does affect your life, because in a workplace, how do you explain you're arriving in late every day?
Mm.
You look like you're really shit at your job.
Yeah, yeah.
So it does affect people's perception of you, and you look like you're zero crack. So it affects your social life and your professional life. And I do get pains in my legs a lot. So.
Yeah, which are actually gross. And like, I got kind of dull aches in my thighs after I got the coil put in. And they'd said to me, you know, you might feel cramping for a couple of days. And it was just the most, I mean, it wasn't the most painful thing I've ever experienced, but it was just so uncomfortable and kind of unrelenting. It was like, I would put it in the same category as one time I had sciatica. And this just like, this pain that just will not go away.
And you're really worried, like, oh my God, am I getting a clot?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, should I go to the mat?
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Because I know two girls who've had clots, so I'm always like...
I feel like you know two girls who've had everything.
I know, but people tell me, my private messages, I say to Dan, like, if something happens to me, delete Burn every account I have. Delete everything. Because so many girls have confessed to me, and I love getting the messages. Like, first of all, I'm really interested. I think, like, if I had brains and patience, I'd have become an ob gyn, because I'm really into women's health. And a girl who studied ob gyn got onto me on Instagram, and she goes, Jean, this is a book you'll really love, and it's like a medical textbook. And I'm like, oh my God. I was like, I'm so glad that a doctor's recommending this to me. But I really like hearing about different conditions, and also sympathizing, like just being like, no, that is shit, you have that. If you want to go for coffee, probably not go for coffee, it's probably bad for us. But I hate herbal tea, and I have to drink it. Well, I'm having proper tea right now, but like, I tried to drink herbal tea and I can't stand it. But
have you tried rooibos or
I hate
or red
it bus? Yeah, my dad like buys it for like me, so I have it when I'm home, but like, I'm not.
I like that.
I like peppermint tea, and that's about it.
Yeah
but
peppermint tea, I think, is a bit like, you can't drink that much if you just feel like you're brushing your teeth.
Yeah. It feels like something you get in also those kind of like overpriced cafes.
Well, yeah. Well,
hipster
it is.
Ones. But yeah. So, and I'm trying to, like, with my endo at the moment, I've put on about 1.5 stone in the past year, and I can't really shift it. So I'm trying to get used to that. But I'm trying to exercise more, because it's good for you, as you know, Rosemary.
I do know.
And
it's funny though, so many of those hormonal, like, polycystic ovaries and endo make it really difficult for women to lose weight.
Yeah.
Because whatever, all these hormonal changes that are happening, like I think PCOS especially makes you more insulin resistant. So you find it harder to process carbs, like all these things. It's just such a headache and a minefield.
Yeah. And some people, like, I meet girls and they think they have endo, like, I'm going to treat it by diet. And I'm like, well, okay, you can eat all the kale you want in the world. It's going to be pretty hard to shift.
Yeah.
To shift your incoming nurse.
Yeah.
Like, just.
Yeah. I mean, there are definite arguments where there are a lot of things that can be. I mean, I kind of shy away from the sentence, like, it can be treated by diet.
I think you
can
say.
You can help things with diet. You know what I mean?
But like, one girl was talking about me recently, and she was like, oh, well, I'm not going to get the surgery. And if I do have to get the surgery and I'm going to tell them to leave it in there. And I'm just a bit like, okay, like, kind of my brow furrowing, just being like, this is not a coffee. Like, I'm not the person who's going to be like, yeah, I'm going to be the person to be like, are you sure?
Yeah, like sure, you can positive think that away.
But also, if you eat less bread, if you eat more vegetables, if you don't have sugary drinks, you are going to feel good.
Yes.
And
yeah,
I think
agreed. You're like, going to feel healthy, better, and you're going to be healthier.
Yeah. Healthy eating and doing exercise and watching, not emotionally eating and all that, you're going to feel amazing. That's what happens. It's not going to cure. Endo is incurable. And the thing about Lena Dunham's, she doesn't say she had her, Lena Dunham, basically, to readers or listeners who haven't heard, she had a hysterectomy, and she wrote about it for Vogue. And I haven't read the essay yet because I feel I'm too close to it. But I do have to read it for a thing in the coming days. But a lot of articles framed, she had a hysterectomy for her endo.
To cure her endo, yeah.
And she does say in the article that it wasn't to cure her endo, it was to treat her pain. It's not to cure for endo. Endo doesn't live in the womb. It lives in other parts of you. So you basically have to get rid of like the lower half of your body in some cases to cure your endo.
And I mean, I hadn't realized that either until I spoke to women who were saying, like, in the 80s and the 70s and 80s, it was really like the only cure for this is a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
And women would have hysterectomies and then still have fucking endo.
Yeah. So it's like there's loads of knowledge around that. And when you go to the endo information days, you'll talk to people who've had different treatments. Some people have like been put into early menopause and stuff like that. There's a host of different things. And infertility is a big thing with endo, but 70% of women who have endo go on to have children.
So say if there's anybody listening who thinks that they may have endo, what would you tell them to do? Or like, what are the first steps? I mean, obviously go to your fucking doctor.
Yeah, but like, cynically, find a job that has health insurance. And maybe because you don't want them to know you already have it, maybe like scam the, I don't know, do a bit more research into that.
Get the health insurance now before you get diagnosed, basically.
Yeah, but then... I don't know how health insurance really works not having it. So that is not my lived experience having health insurance. But maybe like get a job because you might need a bit of more money than you think, especially if you want to manage holistic management of your endo will help you like with your mental health. Like I found acupuncture was amazing for, I loved acupuncture and I know some people are like, oh, Jean, that doesn't work. But for me, I really enjoy that sitting down for, lying down for a half hour with needles in me. And it worked for me. Okay, sue me. See me, science. So you might need a bit more money. So maybe give up on your dreams of working in a publishing house. That sounds really cruel. But do you know what? It's, you're facing into a life of this.
Yeah.
So that's my cynical advice is be a bit practical about your money situation because you might want to get more massages. You might have to go to physiotherapy more. Mm. Yoga is good. Yoga is not cheap.
Yoga is not cheap.
Maybe look at your work situation. Like a stressful environment isn't going to help. Like I think I have IBS. And I think that was developed in tandem with my endo and it's not good. So in my endo, I have real, like I'd say if they opened me up, there would be something to do with my bowels because it's every time I come off my, I take the pill continuously because I got a 5 week period once and it was horrific.
Oh.
I was actually grey. Like my boss said it to me at the time. They were like, Jean, and I was like, you know, and the doctor was like, that's no way to live.
Yeah.
I take it back to back 3 packs at a time. You can take it back to back continuously. It's fine. Yeah. But I take it 3 months at a time.
We're not doctors.
We're not doctors, but the doctor said it was fine. So
you know what, though, on the health insurance thing, I will say, so I recently got health insurance mainly because I was afraid I had MS because I kept getting pins and needles in my arms.
Oh, gosh. Was it from your phone?
What?
Was it from your phone?
No, well, I actually don't know what it's from. So I have an appointment with a neurologist, but I kept, and I would wake myself up with pins and needles all down one arm and my arm would be completely dead. And I Googled it and obviously it's like MS, like main symptom. But then I went, so I decided that before I would get diagnosed with MS, which I was sure I had, I would get health insurance because I was like, it can't be a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
So
look it up.
Yeah, so I signed up and I got health insurance. Then I went to my doctor and my doctor was like, no, that's definitely not MS because if it was, you would get pins and needles in the same place. You know what I mean? So she was like, if you get pins and needles in your right hand all the time, then you could say maybe like that might be MS because it's one of the, what did she call them? Anyway, there's something about like MS affects specific neurons. So it'd be like one neuron is affected and that is the one attached to the hand. That's
science,
my very,
communication.
That's my very, very rudimentary understanding. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah. So I'd say like, don't take a job that you know you're going to be working crazy
80
hours
a week.
Yeah. Because it's going to be really bad for you. So you're just going to adjust your lifestyle. Also, if you're in a relationship, one thing endo can be as painful, can have as painful sex. So that can really affect a relationship. And, you know, make sure you're with somebody who loves you and likes
that's good
you.
Life advice, though, in general, isn't it?
But like, if you think that person is going to be like really annoyed that you can't go out all the time or that you mightn't be in the mood for sex.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you're going to feel like shit. So don't go out with someone who you feel kind of guilty about landing them with, like someone who like enjoys your company. That's good advice for everyone. Yes.
Well, a lot
of people are with people who they put on a show for and it's a performative girlfriend relationship. So you have to be with someone who you're like 100% yourself with.
Yeah. True.
And who's going to be comfortable with you talking about like your body parts all the time in a not sexy way. So, you know, outside the bedroom, like real talk. So,
I think the defining moment in my relationship was when I had a really bad stomach bug and I was sitting on the bed puking into a basin and I wet myself. And like, he was standing right there and I was like, oh my God, I just peed myself. And he was like, it's fine, just get up and go to the bathroom. And he changed the sheets while I was in the bathroom,
that's
like puking
lovely.
And crying. And I was like, this is love.
Yeah. I think like, yeah, Dan's lovely. So he's seen a lot too. I will say that. He deserves a medal. But then again, he doesn't deserve a medal. Because whenever I talk about stories about Dan or something, I talk about it, I go, like, oh, poor Dan. And I'm always like, poor me too.
Well, like, poor you mostly. And also, I mean, I think there's a whole big conversation to be had about men getting medals for doing things that are very human. And we should
Women do a lot of things, yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so like, men getting medals for doing 10% of our emotional labor.
But well then again, Dan does do a lot, like, so, and he is a great person. But yeah, so that's the personal life aspect of it. But like medically, go to your GP. If your GP is a prick or a bitch, go to a different GP.
But that's also an important life lesson. I'm always saying that to people because people ask me about for advice on their mental health and they'll say, oh, I really don't feel like my GP understands. And I'm like, go to someone else.
So go to your GP and start the process. You might have to go private. You might have to pay cash. You just do it.
That sounds very Backstreet.
No, like, but like, I get, like, people are like, I don't have the money for this, don't have the money for that. And I'm always a bit like, this is a bit hard truths, but like, find the money. And yeah, so, like, it's going to save you years of agony or pain. Like, you're still going to probably have pain and agony.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it'll save you waiting 7 years to. Yeah,
sometimes you just have to, you know, sort it out. You just have to grow up. Like, there's moments in your life. Like, another thing about media was with me, I was like, do you know what? The girls I know buying houses and having these kind of lives have partners who have good jobs and who have money, and I'm, you know, I'm and not going to hitch my wagon to somebody else's.
Your partner's an artist, isn't he, though, as well? So it's like neither of you are. No, but you know what I mean? Like
people are like, why don't you live together? I'm like, writers who move in with musicians tend not to stay together very long.
Yeah.
Or maybe they do in a hovel.
Well, I actually remember somebody saying to me that for every creative person, you need to find a partner who is incredibly supportive, but also ideally not in a creative role. Do you know what I mean? So somebody who's willing to do their career in order to allow you to experience yours.
And I know that's pretty sensible advice, but I just had no interest in standing outside Facebook with a sign saying, marry me.
You know? No, but you're now the supportive partner. To Dan's artiste.
Not financially supportive.
Not yet.
I think we're both emotional.
You're like, I have no plans.
Yeah.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there.
Okay. Oh, poor Dan. He's getting a battering.
Jean, thank you very much.
Thanks for
taking
me.
The time to come and talk about your vagina and that dildo with the camera on it, which I'm now going to Google. This has been How to Be Sound with me, your host, Rosemary McCabe. You can find me at rosemarymccabe.com and online on all forms of social media at Rosemary McCabe with an A in my Mac. Jean, would you like a social media link?
I'm no longer on Twitter, but I do have a website, www.jeannesutton.ie.
Oh, .ie.
Yeah.
French JeanneSutton.ie. I would like to say a big thank you to Liam, my lovely producer, whose podcast Meet Your Maker is also out now and really worth a listen, but only after you've listened to mine. I would also like to thank my patrons. I have four, one of whom wishes to remain anonymous, but to the rest of them, Siobhan O'Rourke, Paul Jeremiah Hayes and Kira Norton, I would like to say thank you so much for supporting How to Be Sound. I really appreciate your money and it will go somewhere great, like possibly to muzzle Quillon for the next recording. If you would like to become a patron, you can do so at patreon.com/howtobesound. You will get a little bonus episode to coincide with each episode of How to Be Sound. And this week, or this fortnight rather, there's a very special Patreon bonus episode, which is a recording of a comedy set that I did when I did stand-up comedy that I thought would be a nice tie-in, because I did stand-up comedy for a brand, Bayer, when they were promoting some of their women's intimate hygiene products, and I happened to record the stand-up comedy set on my phone. So that's going to be uploaded to Patreon and you can listen to it there. So that is for patrons only. In the meantime, if you have guests you could suggest that I interview, please do get in touch, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.